I'm also like a little bit ill.
Oh no, you sound a little congested.
Yeah.
If you ask Alberto, I have general malaise.
General malaise.
I have to tell you this story. So it was yesterday. His dad called him and I was sitting on the couch when he answered the phone right next to me. And they were talking and I could only kind of generally follow their conversation because they speak in Spanish. But I know enough Spanish that I can kind of get the gist of what they're discussing. And I knew they were discussing me because my name was said. But I guess Alberto was telling him that I wasn't feeling well. And I heard him use the phrase general malaise to describe my sickness. And I turned to him after he hung up with his dad and I was like, why did you tell your dad that I have general malaise? And he was like, well, because, you know, and I was, let's see, how did they say it in Bridgerton? I was in my cycles.
Oh, yes, in your cycles. Having your cycles.
As well. And so he was like, well, I knew that. And also you had the cold, but I didn't want to tell him about your cycles. And I'm like, then just say I have a cold.
Yeah, we don't have to add to it. That's fine.
Yeah, you didn't have to give a full report of my health.
Oh, my God. Condition. Right? Like, well, these are all the factors.
So we just summarized it as general
malaise. I kind of like that.
Well, which prompted his father to ask him if I was depressed.
Oh.
So.
I guess we have to be careful when we bring up general malaise.
Yeah, I mean, I sounded like a sickly Victorian woman, but which I kind of do feel like.
I'm going to say you have, it's a very sexy voice you got going on right now.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah,
this is my bedroom snot voice. Oh, yeah.
It's funny that you said that. Well, not funny, but like I have what they call tattoo flu. I got a tattoo yesterday.
I saw on Instagram.
I always forget that feeling afterwards of just, yes, it's an open wound, all that stuff. But you get like a slight fever. I had chills. I was like, what is going on? But like it is that little initial feeling of illness, and I hate that. Yeah. That's like one of the worst parts of it.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I only have the one tattoo and it's pretty small, so I don't think I ever had that issue.
Maybe we should get to the task at hand.
Yeah, let's get this freaking over.
Oh my God.
So this is I Hate It, Let's Watch It. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Dawn.
And welcome to season 2, part 2 of the Bridgerton Project. Yep. And we are fully caught up now. We are ready to take on season 3.
Which is wild.
I know. I can't believe we made it.
I watched the trailer for season 3. Oh, did you? Yeah.
You know what? I'm so glad that I am fully caught up because in the playbill today, because I went to go see a show on Broadway today, mm-hmm. there was a little article about Bridgerton and it was like spoilers everywhere.
So wow.
Well, thank God I am already up to date because this would have been very upsetting 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, seriously. It's crazy that we're caught up, but also like, thank God, because
yeah, it was a lot to take in at once.
Yeah, I don't want to say that these last four were as torturous as others have been. I always feel like the final four pick up more and they're better. But yeah, this one, I felt like episode 7 was just the worst filler episode.
We got a lot of filler.
A lot of filler. And it was just repetition after repetition. And I was like, okay, shit or get off the pot. We know what's happening. Like, let's just get to it.
Yes. And I think I would be complaining a lot more about the repetition and the filler stuff if we were doing them one episode at a time. Fortunately, mm-hmm. I think because we're doing them in a chunk, I'm not going to belabor that point as much. But I definitely felt the drag of like, oh my God, did we not just have this conversation? Did these same people not have the same fight an episode ago? Can we move forward? Can we do something new? I'm just like, get to the goddamn point, people.
Yes, because I also felt that when it comes down to Anthony and Kate, everybody is on the same page with their feelings about them and like right. what's going on. So it's just them having conversations over and over again with other people who also have the same feeling. And it's like, okay, but we heard this from so-and-so 10 minutes ago. Same exact idea, same exact feeling.
Right. It's like nobody is getting through to them about what they need to do to be okay with the relationship. Because right. I think it's incredibly clear at this point in the show what is holding each of them back. And it is their sense of duty to their families and feeling like they need to be bearing the burden of everybody else's dreams and expectations. And yeah. you have their family members repeatedly telling them, that's not what we're expecting. We're not putting this pressure on you. You're putting it on yourself. And none of it seems to get through to either of them in an effective way until Kate has a near-death experience. It's just
Jesus.
Like she needed to fall off a horse in order for them to finally fucking get it. And even she will take a little bit longer than Anthony does to finally be like, oh, okay, I get it now.
Yep, 100%. I guess we're gonna just start with them then? Or do you wanna... Because I'm trying to think of even...
We have to start. So where we left off, Anthony had just proposed to Edwina. And Kate had been, like, contemplating, telling Edwina everything, and didn't get the opportunity. So we get the most awkward wedding of all time.
Well, can we start with the dinner with the Sheffields first?
Oh, that comes first. Right, I'm sorry. Yes. Yes.
Just because
hey Giles from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But like I just love seeing him.
You're so funny. We have a dinner scene with the grandparents that are supposed to be giving the inheritance to Edwina once she marries into royalty of sorts. Or just a, what's the term they used? Just a high stature.
A nobleman.
A nobleman. Yeah.
English nobility.
And it's as if they never met this girl in their life.
I don't think they have.
It was just a very, like, overall awkward dinner.
Well, because the mom starts going in on Lady Mary hard for her decisions, for choosing the man that she married instead of the man that they had picked out for her, and picking up and moving to India, and just basically disregarding everything that her parents had ever done for her. So she is giving her the goddamn business, and it gets like real fucking awkward. And they even kind of insult Kate in the process because she's not the biological daughter. Lady Mary is going back at her parents too.
Yep.
Good for her. And I guess she didn't know about the inheritance. Kate was the only person who knew. She's shocked. She is like completely unaware that any of this was going on. And I don't know how Kate was the one who came to discover that stipulation in the inheritance, but whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. Because honestly, my whole feeling about Lady Mary is she was just absentee for a lot. I mean, she admits it.
Yeah, and she was exactly like Violet, mm-hmm. which we will get to later. Because I mentioned I needed an apology from Violet for this. And I did not realize that I also needed an apology from Mary to Kate. Because it sounds like the same thing happened in their family where once her husband died, Kate felt like she was the one who had to take care of everybody. And especially that she owed it to take care of Mary because she wasn't even her actual mother. So all of this stuff is coming out and the Sheffields are pissed. And they're just like, well, fuck this. We're not going to give you any money now. You know, the whole deal is off. We don't care if she marries a prince or a king at this point. Like, we are just donezo with you and your girls. And so Antony is obviously upset. And so is Violet because they feel misled. And he does stand up for them very gallantly and kicks them out. He's just like, get the fuck out of this house.
He's still pissed off underlying about finding out about this inheritance situation, but also I gave him a lot of props for his whole speech in defending them. I thought that was
great. Did a good job, very gentlemanly, very gallant, standing up for them. But once they leave, then he's like, I'm fucking out of here too.
Yeah.
Like, this was fucked up. So Kate tries to explain it. She tells him, like, Edwina didn't know, my mom didn't know, like, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, I figured. Everybody seemed shocked in that room except for you. But then he kind of, like, hangs a left turn and then is like, okay, but, like, also kind of still into you.
Yeah.
So this gives us a really good excuse to end the engagement so that we can separate and just never see each other again because there's no scenario in which we end up together.
Right.
So he still goes through with this wedding because she begs him to. Kate is like, you have to. She loves you. You know, it's not just about the inheritance money. It never was. But you can't break her heart and embarrass her like this.
There's an ultimatum involved as well, because then Anthony is like, listen, I marry her, but you have to go back to India. Like, I can't fucking have you around. And it's kind of, I mean, granted, that was her plan anyway, but just him saying, I can't live with you being in my presence because...
Right. Well, I'm glad that he addressed it because I wasn't really sure what his plan was. And we talked about this in the last episode where it was like, did he think it was going to be like a Three's Company situation? Like they all just live together and like he is secretly pining for her. I mean, his solution is not that much better. She was going to go back to India, but you would assume she would want to visit. And like, especially if they had children or something, she'd still want to be involved in her sister's life. So
it's just a gut punch to hear it from him.
Yeah, well, they keep doing that to each other because they're both very stubborn about not acknowledging what's really going on between them. So anyway, back to the wedding.
Yeah.
The queen decides she's going to host it.
Because of her whole Lady Whistledown theories. Like, she's doing it because she wants to catch Lady Whistledown, and she thinks that if she is in control of everything, that there won't be any, like, side stories to be told in the paper. And...
Yes.
So that's her whole plan here. And she literally has pictures of every possibility of
drawings,
Lady Whistledown.
You know, little sketches.
Drawings,
of,
yeah.
All the ladies. All the potential.
Sepia-toned.
The mugshots.
Sepia-toned sketches. Yeah, basically. And, you know, you obviously get a glimpse of Eloise is in there, and obviously Penelope is too.
Yes, and I thought that her plan wasn't terrible because her thought process was that they would assign a footman basically to each one of the suspects and then give those footmen a little seed of gossip to kind of see what ends up in Lady Whistledown's pamphlets because...
Yeah, I mean, it was a good plan.
Yeah, and it could have worked. It didn't, but it could have. So anyway,
so this wedding.
Let's get back to the goddamn wedding. So everybody's ready to just kind of go along with this farce. And every moment that passed where they were not calling it off, I was like, oh my God, they're not calling it off. They're going to go through with this wedding. How could they go through with this wedding? And every step closer, and like she's walking down the aisle, and I'm just like, oh my God, oh my God, we have reached a point of no return.
None. And it doesn't help that he just has a staring problem.
Oh God, he's not
like
subtle.
He can't even look. No.
He's
never.
Not subtle.
And it just gets worse.
And I will say, though, Daphne does try to talk to him right before the wedding to be like, bro, you sure you're doing the right thing here? And she's like a little bit smug for somebody whose husband is mysteriously absent all the time. I didn't like the way that she tried to talk to him about things because she said something about how she just pities him. Or, like, they all just pity him. And it was super harsh. And I was like, can you have, like, a slight molecule of empathy for your brother? Like, I don't understand why you're being so rude about this.
Yeah.
So, anyway, they're at the altar. Kate is, for lack of a better term, a maid of honor. I don't know if that was actually a thing back in the day, but they have it. So, she's wearing these bangle bracelets from her father that she tried to have Edwina wear, but she insisted that Kate wear them. So she's like fiddling with them because
the
Anthony
worst.
Is eye fucking her across the church.
She needs to be distracted because he just keeps looking past Edwina.
It's so bad.
Right? Like, it's really bad.
So bad. And so she drops one of her bracelets. And this man, you'd think he dropped a child on the floor. He lunges to help her get this bracelet back. And he's like touching her unnecessarily. Like, oh, let me just fondle you to make sure that you got your bracelet back okay.
Right.
And they're air sharing again. It's like this really unnecessary.
The air sharing is so
out of control.
Insane. It gets
out
worse.
Out of control.
It's all on her veil. Like on her dress. Edwina's dress. They're just like basically playing.
Oh, right.
In
yeah,
her
they're like standing
dress.
On,
on the floor rummaging for this bracelet. And you're just like, guys, again.
Guys,
this is insane.
It's a bracelet. Just let it sit on the floor for the ceremony.
Right, we'll pick it up later.
Yeah. So once he gets like straightens himself up and like stands back up on the altar, Edwina finally. Fucking
it clicks
twigs. She is making sense of what just happened, everything that's happened, and she is fucking horrified. She says, I need a minute, and she just runs from that altar. It's pretty mortifying. I was uncomfortable watching this happen. Of all the ruined weddings I've seen in rom-coms for like this similar scenario, this is probably the worst.
Yeah, I felt terrible for her. And it's like, I loved her since the beginning. Like, this innocence, this pure soul. And she starts spitting straight facts as this on. She just lets them have it.
She changes personality immediately. Like, she turns into somebody I was almost like, ooh, you're not as nice of a person as I imagined.
But I guess getting left at the altar, kind
of. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not that I don't understand where her anger is coming from, but I do think that she was very snarky about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she was constantly making little snipes at Kate and Anthony about how, you know, they're liars and, you know, oh, you've had your feelings so well to this point, you can do it for another night. Like, she's just, like, taking every opportunity to attack them for it. So it feels a little bit vindictive to me. And again, horrible thing that they did. But I think maybe shows her age a little bit that she didn't handle it a bit more maturely. And once again, it took Kate falling off a horse for her to have a more emotional epiphany of like,
yes,
okay, we need to mend this fence in case, you know, you ever die
at some point. And then exactly. I mean, and it's at that point that she has one of the most mature conversations.
Yes.
That, not that I wasn't expecting, but it was just that realization of, we need to snap out of this, because, like you said, it took a head injury off a horse to for Edwina to be like, okay, I think I need to fix this with my sister. And yeah, it,
well, her whole point, and I did like this conversation a lot, because it was mostly the acknowledgement that they've both been behaving according to somebody else's needs, wants, and expectations, and realizing that they should be acting for themselves and what they want and what makes them happy. So she's begging Kate, basically, like, just be yourself, do what you want to do, go after who you want to go after, as long as it's what you want.
Mm-hmm.
So this, I felt like this conversation was very parallel to Violet's conversation with Anthony, because they both needed this sort of recognition of what they've been doing for the family, and like, you don't need to do this because we're fine now.
Right.
And with Violet specifically, I had really wanted to hear from her the acknowledgement that she abandoned Anthony to deal with all sorts of shit in the aftermath of Edmund's death, and to at least attempt to understand, like, what kind of impact that must have had on him.
Yeah.
So I could have used more from that conversation. I was glad that it happened. But she was basically using it to be like, look, loving Edmund resulted in some of the greatest pain in my life. But I would choose that life again and again with him, even if it meant facing the same pain of losing him. So just because Kate almost died falling off this horse doesn't mean that you shouldn't try to get what you want and have the life that you want with her.
Yeah, because literally right before, he was going to propose to her. And
yes.
And then she went out in a storm against the rain. I mean, that was wild. I wouldn't even attempt that.
I honestly was real mad at this. And I feel like if it had happened earlier in the season, she would have had amnesia or something. Like, it felt like such a stupid soap opera move to
me. She ended up remembering everything, though, pretty much.
But that was just my own imagining. I was like, oh God, are they going to have her wake up and be like, I don't remember anything.
But they did do the questioning where they're like, do you remember, like, what happened to you? And she recited it all. And then she asked for him.
Right.
And Lady Danbury was like, well, he's the one who saved you. But yeah, so that was like his whole thing. Like, now that she's hurt, it's his fault. And he just has to completely remove himself from the equation altogether now.
Right. But he's dumb. And Violet is like, you're being dumb. And and finally, that seems to sink in. And he's a little bit more determined to get her back. But when he goes to talk to her, she's still like, nah, man, going back to India.
Right.
She doesn't believe that he loves her.
Which I'm not.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why. Oh, because they banged. And she's like, he just wants to marry me because we fucked and he thinks that it's the right thing to do.
We banged in the garden.
Yeah, that was a nice scene. But I can't believe we only saw them bang once.
I know. I mean, kind of twice, but not really. I guess it was the actor.
Yeah, no.
That was the after, yeah.
Given everything we got last season, it's
That's true. That was a lot of banging last season.
I know. They really starved us here.
They did. And they tried to make up for a little with, like, those, like, kind of callback scenes a little bit where, like, the angles were different. So it was like, oh, you saw him really going down on her and then you
right,
you know, like, and then you're like, okay, well, that's, am I supposed to be satisfied with this? Because I'm not.
No, yeah, I was not fucking rude. Like, it took them way too long to get together.
Right? The fact that it was that the second to last episode or the last episode that that happened? I feel like almost everything happened in the
last. I think it was the second to last episode. Because, like, the last episode, again, like, because, like, this is the thing. I was kind of expecting that she was going to wake up from this coma, have the same realization that he does, where it's like, I almost died without being honest with myself about my feelings for this man. So I need to now be honest. And he was going to feel the same way. And, like, everything was going to just come out from that point and live happily ever after. But, like, it takes her so fucking long to come around to it. Like, she's still so up her ass about, like, it not being appropriate or whatever. And it comes down to the very last ball of the season that she attends with Edwina. And Edwina kind of finally pushes her and is like, go talk to him. Like, you know, like, allow this to happen if it's something that you want to have happen. And so they dance together to an acoustic version of Wrecking Ball.
I hate when they do this. No, I know. I mean, some of the other ones they've done, they did earlier.
Dancing on My Own was the only one that was good, I think.
They also did Pink's, where is it? I wrote it down.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. What About Us?
Yes, I thought that one was pretty good. But cheesy. Wrecking Ball was quite a choice. And you see them dancing, and it's to the point where they're the only ones dancing because everyone's staring at them.
Right, everyone's leering because they, like, everybody else is now, like, openly acknowledging what we already know.
Right.
And then the queen is the one who kind of sanctions the relationship and is like,
she's like, don't they look great? Don't they look amazing?
Yeah, don't they look great together, everyone? And then now nobody can really say shit about them being together. Right. And she's still not good to be with him for, like, another 20 minutes because they have to go out to the garden or whatever. And he tells her that he loves her, and then she's like, oh, well, they finally have that. They finally get that out of the way.
It's like, this took so fucking long.
Oh my god, a fucking eternity. It really did not need to be. And again, if we did half hour episodes for this show, I think it could have been told in a much more efficient way.
Yep, definitely. And when they first started breathing on each other instead of kissing, like, it could have been said then because it was obvious then. And it's just like, you guys obviously love each other. It's not
it's not a question. It's not a secret. Like, nobody's confused. And I will say one more note about Edwina. And I don't remember if I said this on the podcast or if I just said it to you. Who would be
you definitely said it to me.
Edwina. Okay, great. I said Prince Friedrich would be amazing with Edwina. And guess what the queen does at the end?
I have a nephew.
Suggestion. So I assume that Edwina might get a happy ending with a prince. And she would make a great princess, I think. So
she would. I mean, they'd be a great match because he's fantastic. And I think that they have the same morals and feelings.
Genuinely nice people.
Yep.
Are we done with these dingoes? And can we
move on? Yeah, so I mean, basically they get married and they're cute newlyweds and they go to play croquet, you know, because that was their initial fun.
They can't resist a competition.
Right. They're still at each other's throats, but they're still, like, all over each other, which I found so
I was uncomfortable.
I'm like, nobody wants them to be like this.
No, and, like, yeah, it's sweet, but, like, you're in front of all your family, and, like, your mom is standing right there. Like, don't come down and play croquet if all you want to do is bang. Just don't even.
And they even say that, too. He's like, should we just go back upstairs? Like, what the
fuck? They're like, never. And then they continue to air breathe each other, and it's just like, oh my god, stop.
But then the dog took the Newton. Took the ball anyway, so whatever. But yeah, so that seems like a nice little happily ever after. And we will get them. We will get them in season 3. I saw them in the trailer, so I don't know how much, but
Yeah, we'll see. To be determined. I saw that Daphne will not be in season 3, so they just both disappear off the face of the earth.
Right, they just never have to come back for anything.
Cool, cool, cool. Before we move on to the Featheringtons and their nonsense, just briefly want to mention Benedict.
Oh, my babe.
He's kind of going through it now because he gets really into his art school. He's loving it there. And then he incidentally finds out that Anthony donated a large sum of money to the school to ensure that he would get in. And so now he just has doubts that he deserves it, that he's earned it, that he's a good artist at all. And it seems like by the end of the season that he's giving it up because he feels like so shitty about it.
Yeah, it made me sad. I love him so much.
Yeah, it made me sad too. But I feel like they're really backburnering Benedict at this point. Like,
I want his story. I need his story.
He doesn't get a lot of screen time, and what we are getting feels very surface level. So I don't know if they're going to change that in season 3 now that we have like more ancillary characters that we're dealing with, but
yeah.
I would like to see more of him.
I'd actually like to see, because I love the brothers' interaction. Like, there is a scene in the trailer, and I'm just kind of like, they are so funny together that I just know. Want more of that.
I think the Bridgertons all have great chemistry, like, the way that Eloise shits on them all. Like,
her and Benedict it's great.
Specifically, like, seem to be kindred spirits. Like, they all have really great banter together, so sometimes I think they have better banter than the romantic couples that supposedly
exist. Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess that's why it's titled after them.
I guess. So anyway, the Featheringtons.
Oh, God.
Yes.
I was a little confused at some... I mean, obviously it was all a game. I assume it was all a game.
I'm actually... But... I was real impressed with Portia. She's still not a good person, but she did what she fucking had to do in this situation, and I applaud her efforts. A plus. I didn't see it coming.
I didn't see it coming either, especially given how Cousin Jack was kind of trying to seduce her throughout.
Flirting with her, yes.
Yeah, and do you think he was genuine with that? Because, like, what did he really need? No. He just wanted her for her business sense, because he realized that she was pretty good at that kind of thing, and it was just...
Well, it was mostly her idea, so, you know, she was the one who suggested to him that they scam people out of money by... encouraging them to invest in his ruby mines. By the way, these are ruby, not palladium mines.
Yeah,
and they're ruby. In South Carolina, not Riverdale. So we got a few things wrong. But so he doesn't think of this. It's her idea. But he's really excited about it because it sounds like he would love to make some quick cash. But yep. I like how they planned this. They were going to, like, scam all these townspeople out of their money. And then there was, like, no escape plan. Because, obviously, they would start expecting returns on their investments. And if they weren't getting any, then there would be a big problem. So, ultimately, Jack has to say, like, well, we'll have to leave, you know? We'll finish wringing everybody dry. And then we'll leave for America. We'll go. So, this whole thing has been artfully crafted by Portia, who is just trying to get rid of this goddamn man. From the second he walks in, she does not want him there.
No.
And so she's basically thinking, how can I get rid of him and make some money in the process? So what she ends up doing is keeping the majority of the money that they have now stolen from people. So that's why she still sucks as a person.
Yeah, like, she can only be good for, like, for, you know, you just gotta keep that.
Right. Like, I can admire the schemer in her, but at the same time, she did scam people out of money. So she's going to keep the majority of the money. She uses some of the money to arrange for transport back to America for Jack. Yep. And is basically going to tell everybody that they got scammed along with the rest of them. And Jack ran off with all of their money and he's never coming back. And he has, like, no choice but to go along with this plan because no one's going to believe that she was involved.
Right.
He has no proof that she was involved. It's honestly genius. Like, I'm so proud of her. But at the same time, like, you still stole money from people. And, like, now what are you going to do? But exactly. She had her lovely lady's maid, Mrs. Varley, who is a Varley master is of forgery.
Forgery. I mean, she just, her and her signatures are top notch.
Yeah. They forged some official documents stating that now the estate is going to pass directly to the first son of one of her children. So hopefully Philippa and what's-his-face have been boning profusely since they got married.
But I'm sure. We haven't seen, we saw them for like 5 seconds, so they must be.
Yep. So good for them. They kind of turned that shit around, and it was not the most honest way to do it, but they got it fucking done, so.
And I also did love the scene where Colin calls them out and is like,
yes,
these are made of glass, and he bashes the fucking necklace. And then he also, which I thought was great, well, earlier.
Yes, we have to back up a little bit, because honestly, I was like, why are we still caring about this guy? Will was in the first season.
Right.
As, like, Simon's friend / confidant / boxing buddy, and he throws that fight for Lord Featherington, yada yada. But, like, he comes back in this season opening a gentleman's club, I guess, with the money that he won. And it's kind of like, why are you still here? Why do we
care? Right, like, there's really no significance that we need. And then this is what we get, because it's Cousin Jack and Colin are discussing Colin's possible participation in
the investing scheme.
The investing. And Will comes right out and is like, don't fucking trust him. He's worse than his cousin. You know, he fucked me over. And that was a whole thing. And then they walk out and
Colin seemingly defended
Jack.
Cousin Jack. He was like, the Featheringtons have been unfairly besmirched and yada yada. And it was just like, all right, so.
And for
me, I thought that that was like maybe some like misplaced.
That's what I thought too.
Penelope, like he was just feeling defensive for Penelope's sake. But turns out he was faking.
He was faking. And then once he, you know, does the whole shebang where he takes Cowper's necklace. I forget her first name.
Cressida.
Cressida's necklace.
Cressida Cowper.
God, hate her so much.
That Riverdalian name.
It really is.
I know. Some of them are. And I'm just like, oh, God.
It's horrible. And bashes the necklace and all of that. He does go to Will's and he apologizes and he brings all these men with him.
Yes, because the club had not been doing so well.
His advertising was not great. Because he also seems like a very, like, I'm a very shy
person. He's not personable.
The last thing I'm going to do. Yes. That's not something, not that I'm not personable, but like, you need a backbone. You need to be a little more out there and outgoing and to do something.
Right, wanting to
like
make
that.
Conversation with your customers, you know, networking, that kind of thing.
He doesn't seem approachable at all.
No, exactly. Like, he's always got this scowl on his face.
Even his wife is like, dude, buck up. Like, we got to fucking make money. You can't be like, a puss this whole time.
Yeah, don't scare away the customers with your snarls. So it was nice that Colin tried to make up for that whole situation by bringing all his buddies in to take there. So I don't know if we're going to see more of Will in season 3, but
we don't need to.
Exactly. Like, he's already married. So, like, what is his value to this conversation?
Yep.
Anyway, so.
Oh, there is a scene I just have to bring up really quick because we all like to document when Dawn cries.
Oh, no.
The scene where Edwina and Mary come in to talk to the queen and the king comes out.
Yeah.
Oh, this was tough. The king comes out and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, like I'm interrupting. And obviously he's not there. So he thinks that
it's
he's late for the wedding, his wedding. And you see the tears in the queen's eyes. And then Edwina just says the nice, like, oh my God, it was the sweetest thing. And she's just like, you know, it's best if you go rest, because if you, like, she was just so,
she was gentle and understanding. Yeah, she knew exactly what to say, because everybody else was kind of frozen, like, they didn't know what to do. The queen was obviously both mortified and concerned, because now other people are aware
of her
husband's condition. So Edwina really helps calm him down and send him back off with such grace and composure. And it is what kind of leads the queen to forgive the fact that she's gonna ruin the wedding that she was throwing with her and Antony, and just kind of let her make her own decisions. Like, there's just sort of an understanding there that it kind of brings the Sharmas back into the queen's
good graces and yeah. And there's peace in the kingdom, shall we say.
Yep. But yeah, that was one of those scenes that I was just like, wow, that hit. Because I mean, yeah. It's back then, again, they don't know what these things are. So him having, mm-hmm. you know, dementia. Alzheimer's dementia, you know, like it's not something that they figured out and could handle. Yeah. And right. So the fact that Edwina, who is, again, this pure, innocent soul that hasn't really experienced much, was able to calm this man down. It was one of those scenes that I was like, wow, here we are making fun of this show. And then something like this happens. And I'm like, wow. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I
think if we didn't dither about on other things that are like less important and spent more time on the real stuff like that, I might like the show a little bit more. It feels very surface level on most things. So you can tell the moments that I've called out on the podcast that I've enjoyed are the ones where we've really kind of gotten deeper underneath the skin yep. of each character. So, but like,
which speaking we get a little of, deep of, yeah, I was going to say, yeah,
speaking of superficial people, Penelope is public enemy number one for me right now.
Your text last night was great. She sucks. I'm like sitting at dinner and I see Penelope is the worst. And I was like, very much so.
Yes, and then is. I sent the gif from Parks and Rec.
Yes.
Because that's what I just, which that's it what fits I was saying in my perfectly. Own head. I'm just singing. So Penelope is
digging a big hole for herself.
Yeah. Well, she's trying to turn Eloise away from looking into Lady Whistledown's identity. And she's so focused on doing this that she loses sight of all humanity, essentially.
Yeah.
And Eloise has been working more and more with Theo Sharp about what he knows about Lady Whistledown. And their friendship / chemistry is really cute. And obviously risky because it's a seedier part of town. Eloise really shouldn't be going there unchaperoned to see him. There's really no future for their relationship, but they have a lot in common. And, you know, he's introducing her to this world of feminist rallies and stuff. And she's really excited about it. And
yep.
When she tells Penelope she's doing this, Penelope is just like shitting on her. Like, you can't see him. Don't go see him. And it has nothing to do with trying to protect Eloise or her reputation. She's trying to protect her goddamn self. And she's so, so annoying. But the queen begins to suspect that Eloise is Lady Whistledown because during the ruined weekend wedding catastrophe.
Yeah, this wasn't Kate a good look Anthony, for Eloise, for sure.
She scampers off while the drama's going down to go see Theo. And because the queen is having all of her suspects followed, one of the footmen follows her to the printing house. And so the queen confronts Eloise and is like, I know you're Lady Whistledown.
Right. Like, that's an easy giveaway right there. She yeah, really fucked like, that
fucking
up.
Confess. She really set herself up in a bad way. And yep. So when Eloise tries to say, no, 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 it's not me, the queen doesn't believe her. And she's like, okay, I'll give you 3 days to change your mind and confess, and then I'll ruin your fucking family. So it's like, cool. Okay, great. I really have no options here. So she tells Penelope this, and Penelope is confiding in Genevieve about the whole situation. She's like, I don't know what to do. Genevieve's like, well, like, what if you wrote something about Eloise that she would really write bad about herself, and then the queen,
mm-hmm.
right? That so that the queen would be like, well, she would never reveal something that personal. So Penelope's like, no, never, never in a million years. And then she does end up doing that.
Yeah, not great. And like at the worst possible time, because honestly, it's the downfall of the wedding. The Bridgertons are on thin ice. With everything.
They try to throw this unity ball.
Oh my God. Could I tell you, that was actually like a really cute scene. The dancing scene
was really nice. I liked that a lot.
I felt like they were swinging Lady Danbury way too hard though.
Oh yeah.
Like I thought she was going to collapse. She walks
with a cane. She's going to be damaged.
I'm like, this woman, they're gonna fling her against a wall by accident.
Oh man, take her down a peg though. That woman is too cocky.
Yeah, but I love her. I love her so
yes
much.
Of course.
Yeah, so that was like a cute scene, but like nobody shows up to this, and you think it's because of the wedding, but no, it's really because of the Eloise
expose. She's a radical.
Yeah.
Yes. The basically, Lady Whistledown reveals that she's been into some feminist rallies, hanging out in like a seedy part of town, et cetera, et cetera. And Eloise is obviously devastated because this gets Theo in trouble. He gets really upset with her. she goes to check on him. He's like, why the fuck are you here? Like, I'm gonna get in a lot of trouble. And you have the protections of your family, your society, your station, and I have none of that. And so she feels really bad and she leaves.
I'm kind of surprised that that wasn't, I mean, obviously she's going through a lot emotionally because she's dealing with the fallout of this, but how that wasn't the initial light bulb going off that it was Penelope.
Yeah, because how...
Because that's the only person she told.
Right. And I mean, Penelope does try to say, well, people have been whispering that you're going around.
Bitch, like, Penelope, what the fuck?
I know. Like, she's such an asshole because she's literally only doing it for her own good.
Yep.
The time that Eloise tells her, I'm being accused of being Lady Whistledown, that's when you come clean and say, oh my God, actually, I'm Lady Whistledown. Let me help you fix this. You have to come clean at that point, and she doesn't. So we get to the point of the last ball of the season. It's the Featheringtons ball.
With the glitz and the glam and the gold and the glitter. All the gold
you can imagine in the world.
Oh, God.
So Eloise has given up her search for Lady Whistledown. You know, she's done with it. She's done with Theo. It's all over. She tells Penelope this. Penelope is so relieved. And then, like, to try to lighten the mood, Penelope starts gossiping to her about something she just heard.
In the worst way.
Yeah, two guys talking about next to her, because that's how she used to get all of her gossip for Lady Whistledown.
Mm-hmm.
So she's just like, oh, I just heard that this guy is hooking up with this girl. And you can see her over there. She's stuffing tissues down her shirt, and it's for him, blah, blah, blah. And, like, Eloise just kind of has this moment of, like, oh, fuck.
Fuck. Like, you sound exactly like her.
And she kind of disappears during the fireworks portion of the evening and, like, tears Penelope's room apart.
That was a little crazy and intense that she would take it upon herself to just go through Penelope's room. It's her first instinct, but then also, like...
And Penelope's hiding spot was pretty good. She was putting stuff in under a floorboard, under a corner of her carpet. So I don't even know if Eloise would know to look there, but apparently she found her stash of cash from her Lady Whistledown pamphlets. So she confronts her. She's like, you're Lady Whistledown. And Penelope has the goddamn balls to be like, no, it's not me. And it's just like, are you fucking kidding right now? Like, just own it now.
Right. Like, at this point, she has all the proof she needs.
Right. And so finally, she does admit to it because she really can't. But she's so nasty.
So bad.
Eloise. And she's basically accusing Eloise of being jealous that she's done something with her life and has turned, you know, words into actions. And Eloise is so pathetic that she hasn't actually... She's all talk and she hasn't actually done anything. And it's just like, what are you doing? What does Lady Whistledown do for society? What
is, right. And you're hiding on top of it. So it's like you're this, as you know, they like to call her, this wallflower who's so quiet. But you're not innocent because you are using being a wallflower to get all of your dirt.
Pretty much. Just the self-righteousness of it is... so frustrating. And she tries to almost make her feel bad. She's like, imagine how I felt all this time, like, hiding this secret. And it's just like, why are we feeling bad for you? You did this to yourself.
That was her immediate defense.
Yeah, you could have brought Eloise in on the truth at any moment, even at the very beginning with the first publishing. You could have been like, guess what, I'm doing this and maybe you should help me or something. But she doesn't do that. And you've made your bed and now you must lie in it.
I think they would have made a great team too, just given
I think so
Eloise's
too.
Detective skills. But it was just for Penelope to go that hard on her, I thought was just so... Like, I understand that's, like, the defense of, like, oh, you got, and now you're gonna say the most outlandish shit just because you got caught. It's devastating, but at the same time, it's like, that's kind of rough. And it's been said before, I think even Benedict has said things to Eloise, just like, she has many talents. So the fact that she's not pursuing anything, fine, but to have your best friend say that to you is just worse than any other betrayal before that.
Right. Honestly, there's just so much wrong with it. I don't know how to get on board with Penelope for season three. Like, my major concern here is that I find the way that she spoke to Eloise, the way she tried to manipulate her, and the fact that she's been doing this the whole time, even, and just sort of delighting in people's misery and problems and airing them out for everyone to see. What kind of a person does this?
And how did it start?
Right. Like, why did it start?
Yeah, why did it start?
Was she bored? Like, was she frustrated? Like, if it turned into almost like a Penelope villain era kind of thing, where she just was like, I fucking hate all of you people. I don't want any part of the society. Maybe I would buy that more, because it's hard to believe that she could be in love with Colin, but also writing things that destroy his family's reputation and treating his sister like this and keeping secrets from him. And so it's just like, I don't understand her contradictory actions and thoughts.
Yeah.
And I find it really difficult to think that I could get behind her, which is funny because I said the same thing about Antony, but I do think
that changed. That,
yeah. But also I think his sins were not this grave. I think that what Penelope is doing and has done is much worse than anything Antony has done.
And we see too that you think that this would be the thing that gets her to stop.
Oh, right. But she doesn't.
She's not going to stop. She's not going to stop.
Nope.
So, again, I hope season three, maybe season three is the villain era. Everybody's looking at it as this, like, oh, glow up for Penelope, but maybe it's the takedown. Maybe it's this, like, great.
Maybe it's the downfall. Who knows? But
yeah,
I think she needs a real slap in the face. Because I wanted to hit her a lot in these episodes. I keep thinking there was, like, one scene where she's, like, screaming at Eloise for no good reason. And I just wanted to smack her in the face, be like, can you shut up?
Yeah.
You are not trying to help her. You are only hurting her. And it's not fair.
And I felt like we were bamboozled because, like,
heckin' bamboozled.
We were. Like, season one into season two even, like, I was like, I love her. She's so innocent. She has this bitch mom and horrible sisters. And, you know, she's the outcast. And I feel horrible for her. And it's like, fuck. I take that back.
I don't know that I ever really, really liked her, but I didn't dislike her. I was kind of neutral on her for a while.
Right. I guess neutral's a better, like, I wasn't like rooting for, like, it wasn't like this, she's my favorite character, but I definitely felt for her a little given circumstances and stuff.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Given it just she got seemed worse. A little bit awkward and...
Yeah. Forced to wear yellow.
We'll see what she does with herself in season three, but I don't know that she deserves the happy ending that they're kind of alluding to.
I know. And it's crazy to me, too. I don't know. I don't think the gap of filming was that bad, but just they make a joke of it in the trailer about Colin's glow up. Antony and Benedict say something about, like, who are you?
When did you get so fit, I guess?
Fucking hot. Oh, like,
and actually, the thing we also have to mention is that Penelope overhears Colin telling his bro friends that there's, like, no way he would ever be courting Penelope Featherington. So that is a little dagger to her heart. But at this point, I don't care because she's been so mean to other people.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, well, you're getting what you deserve now.
No need to destroy him. Leave him out of this. He's a good boy.
Such a good boy.
He's such a good boy. I mean, he's brutally friend-zoned her several times, like, at this point.
Yeah.
You have to take the hint and run with it.
I did get the sense in that conversation he was having with them that he was saying it because he felt like it would be uncool of him to admit that he might like her.
Yeah.
Which is harsh.
Because they, and I mean, they didn't make it matters. They didn't make matters any better because they were just like, so you have a Penelope Featherington, like, what's that all about? And it's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, like, that would be a weird match, or implying that, like, he would not want to be seen with her.
Right.
But he didn't seem to care about that in season one, because I feel like remember when he dissed Cressida and took Penelope to dance instead? So it didn't seem like that ever mattered to him before, but maybe, I don't know, I guess as guys get older, they start to care more about that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm wondering if Cressida is going to get more screen time, because, again, in the trailer, we just see Penelope looking on where Eloise is kind of buddying up with Cressida now.
Oh,
like her new bestie.
That's an unlikely bestie.
I know, so I don't know how genuine that is, or if it's just, like, a ploy for Eloise to just be a bitch back to Penelope, you know, very possible.
Yeah.
But yeah,
we'll see how she handles it. I hope that she's a bit more graceful, but yeah. I do think Eloise might have a more vindictive style of revenge than perhaps.
Rightfully so, like. Especially after.
Yeah, I can't blame her, but I would like to see her take the high road, because then I could just be like, yeah, you're doing the right thing. Penelope's an asshole.
But now I have a question.
Okay.
I don't know if you'd be able to answer it, or if anybody can. And maybe
I will try, Dawn. I will do my best.
Maybe I just missed it, but this season was basically Eloise's
coming out,
right? But since like nothing came of that, are we just skipping over her entirely? Because next season it's Fran. What did I recently watch that had a fern in it?
Charlotte's Web? Is that the name?
No, but we'll go with that because I'm now remembering it was something else. But Fran. So I guess we just skip over her and she just doesn't get to look for a guy anymore? Like, I don't get how that works.
No, I think you can go back on the marriage mart as many years as you need to, but I think they make a bigger deal out of your first time around.
The first time, okay.
If you match, then like that's really cool for you. But I got the impression that Prudence and Philippa have been on the market for several
years. For a while.
Perhaps.
Makes sense. And it's funny to me because Prudence is so out. Just like, she has no fucking idea. Oh my God. She has no fucking idea. She's at the wedding and she's trying to mimic the
it's like a live statue kind of thing.
Yes, yes. And she's just so like, has no fucking idea what's going on around her, which sometimes I wish I had that power where I could be that aloof and like not know what's going on around me. That would be lovely. No, but she is just...
She's a do-to-do on another level.
Like, she's engaged to Jack, but at the same time, it's like, he's courting or trying to court your mom for this whole
thing. I was waiting for somebody to walk in on that and it to be a real awkward moment, and it never did. So I'm kind of glad of that.
Like, I thought she'd walk in, but I'm like, would she even realize what was happening? She'd probably think it was something else. Like,
yeah, it's exactly.
It's just so weird.
Or she would out them like without realizing that it would really bring shame on her as well and whatever. But I hope Prudence straightens herself out a little bit.
Yeah,
she's a little catty in the way that Philippa is not. She's been rude to Penelope and stuff, so not that Penelope doesn't deserve it, I guess, but maybe she'll find her way in the next marriage mart.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, every year there is one, so
it's actually kind of a nice concept, the idea of, like, there's only a few months out of the year where you would date and try to find a partner. And then, like, the rest of the year, you could just,
you like, don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. You could just stay inside and be a couch potato.
Like what
potato.
I do now. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. We're not out on the marriage mar yet.
No. And I love how they call it a season, too.
Yeah. We don't know how long it is, necessarily. No. It seems like it's for the summer.
Right.
But that's not really confirmed at any point. It's just kind of our own assumption.
All right. Maybe it's a quarter. 3 months, maybe.
Yeah. Maybe like May to August.
That would be prime time, I would think. But wow. Yeah. That's, I think we covered everything.
Man, we did it, Dawn. We fucking did it.
We got it all done.
We did it so good.
We really did.
Yeah. I'm proud of us. We made it.
Yep. And now this is out the day that season 3 is out. And that's 4 episodes that I'm assuming we're going to do 1 a week.
I also assume that. So let's operate under that for now.
Yeah, that will feel so much better for a little
it's
while.
It's going to be nice. Yes.
Oof.
What a relief.
I could watch 1 episode right before we record. And
exactly.
Fantastic.
And not have to like plan my whole week around it. And I'll be able to say things like Edwina and Prince Friedrich should get together on like an actual episode, instead of not being able to put it on the record and then having after the fact to be like, I said this.
Yeah.
I said this, but it was in private after we recorded the first 4 episodes.
I did make a note where I wrote, that entire cake is gone. So during the wedding, they had that huge-ass cake outside, mind you, which how that didn't melt or ugh.
I know, and it looked hot.
It looked really hot. And then they still had the cake, and the next scene, it's gone. That cake was gigantic. Like, I know there was a decent amount of people there, but like...
Maybe it just melted.
Maybe, but it was gone.
Completely. It's funny you say that, because I had the same thought about the cake. I was like, did they use buttercream frosting back then?
Probably.
Because that's going to melt right the fuck off that cake.
I don't think they knew what fondant was, that's for sure.
Yeah, true.
So that was melty, gross.
Melty, melty, gross.
But yeah, so that's like how my notes are. But when it's one episode, I get a little more detailed where I can remember So
it'll be nice.
Yeah, it'll be nice. But we are on a great schedule right now and we're up to date. So everybody, if you followed us in the journey of, you know, recapping past seasons,
we salute you.
We are present day ready to go.
We are current.
Yep, we are current. And don't forget, we'll still do movies at some point. So let us know if you have any ideas. And you know where to find us. Usual spots, Instagram, Twitter, website. And is there anything you'd like to add?
May 16th is National Mimosa Day. So everybody have your mimosas. And if you're like me, the proper way to make a mimosa is champagne and a splash of orange juice. The tiniest of splashes.
Yeah, because the sugar ruins it. You gotta...
Absolutely. It really does. It's not even about just getting drunker. It's just like, if you put too much orange juice in there, the sugar is overwhelming. You're gonna have a headache. So don't do that to yourself.
Yeah. I one time had mimosas. My uncle made them with the Simply... Not Simply Orange, but like, you know how they have the different flavors now? So it's like there was like a strawberry or a raspberry, whatever it was. Yeah. And he did it with one of those. And I was like, this is phenomenal. When it's not that thickness of an orange juice, kind of, it's just nice. Yeah. Oh, refreshing.
At Christmas time, my mom makes what she calls a poinsettia. And it's basically a mimosa, except instead of orange juice, it's pomegranate juice.
Oh, that sounds so good.
Yeah, because it's nice and tart, but just like a little bit sweet. And it makes a really lovely red beverage. Perfect for the holidays. So
very nice. A red sparkly beverage.
We'll bring back our quacktails.
Ooh.
Quacktails at some point. We'll bring back cocktails at some point, I promise.
I want to know what a quack is for the first.
Oh my god. My brain fought. My malaise.
I was going to say, we're blaming the malaise again.
My goddamn malaise.
Your malaise wants a quacktail. That's what it is.
I'm so malaise-y.
I really love this term. I want to use it for the rest of my life.
General malaise, please.
General like, malaise.
The next time you have to request a sick day or something, just be like, I can't come in tomorrow. I have general malaise.
Oh my god. Yeah, so until next time.